You forgot the first rule of remakes, Jill. Don't fuck with the original.
Birdemic 2, The Resurrection, is coming out on DVD, and you know what that means?
Another episode of Don't F with the Original. With Nicholas, I'm the video game correspondent for Idiomatic.
And I am Dimitri, editor-in-chief of Idiomatic and movie critic. So, today we're going to talk about the original, the one that started it all, Birdemic Shock and Terror.
A classic.
If you want to call it that.
Yes. Well, the movie is cut in two parts. The first half of the movie is basically showing us how Jane Nguyen is inept at movie making. And the second part is them being attacked by CGI birds.
In which we learn that James Nguyen's special effects team is inept.
Yes, indeed. But more seriously, the first part is like our two heroes, Rob and Natalie, meeting and very awkwardly falling in love, I guess. And after they make love for the first time in a dirty hotel room, that's when the birds attack and the birdemic starts.
Yeah, and it's like it's 1 hour before the birdemic starts.
It's a solid 50 minutes at least. You know, they really, really want to, you know, you to feel the lives of those two characters.
Well, what did he call it? The romantic thriller, I think, is what James Nguyen called it. He called himself the master of the romantic thriller, where you have all these romantic elements and then the thriller elements kick in, and he feels that that makes him special as a director.
It is romantic thriller. That's something I would never want to go watch if I heard that.
I think the romantic thriller as a concept is fine. I'd like to call it a thriller. It's sort of like, hey, get to know the characters before bad things happen to them. But
yeah, makes sense. Makes you care about the characters.
Yeah, but, you know, not that way. This is way too long. Like, this is Birdemic snore and terror.
Yeah. But the point of the movie, watching the movie, is really not to be, you know, enthralled by the incredible action. It's really spotting in every scene what you spot is wrong, so what you probably would not have done if you had the means to make a movie.
Like, in fairness, making a movie is actually pretty complicated. A lot of his technical errors are technical errors most people would do.
Yeah.
Which is why they're not allowed to make movies.
No.
But James Nguyen has a vast fortune behind him. He's a very savvy businessman, so he managed to put money into making this movie without having any of the basics on how to make movies.
Exactly. Like, you know, scenes of driving for hours and hours just for one guy to go from point A to point B. You don't need to see him drive for 5 minutes. It's
spelling mistakes in the opening credits. That was pretty funny.
Indeed. Scenes where the sound doesn't pick up. They're walking on the beach and the only thing you hear is the sound of the noise hitting the mic and you can't hear what the characters are saying at all.
Yeah, that's, by the way, people, that's what happens when you don't use a boom when you're recording in outside scenes or even a lot of inside scenes. You need a boom, like that little perch with a mic onto it. Like, it's not because people like to put things into the frame for no reason. It's because if you record sound from middle ground instead of right next to the people's heads, you're going to catch every sound the room. So that's ambient noise, white noise, all of that. Yeah. And that's what you like. If you want to see what it would sound like, yeah, Birdemic shows you what it sounds like. It sounds pretty much like this.
And that's what is it, Birdemic.
Like, did you understand any of this? No, it's terrible. And ambient sound, like white noise, is actually really hard to recreate exactly the same, obviously, because it's just chaotic noise. It's an organic thing. You can't just recreate the same thing just by luck.
Yeah.
So there's these great takes when the camera's on one side because it's filming the girl talking, and then the camera's on the other side when they're filming the guy talking because they're facing each other. Obviously, they can't do it at the same time because otherwise you'd see the camera in each shot.
Yeah. Right?
So they have to record over the guy's scene and then record over the girl's scene. So with the ambient noise problem, is the noise changes every time the shot changes. It's hilarious.
And you really get to notice it because there's always this 1 or 2 second transition between each sentence in the conversation when you switch from guy to girl, because I guess his editing skill, not so great, you know. So, how are you? Fine. How are you? I'm doing good.
In the meantime, the background noise is like, It's yeah. crazy.
Yes. I mean, it's spectacular. You really have to watch it to really enjoy the crappiness of the production. It's that special.
But I also want to emphasize just how horrible a writer he is. Like, he's really bad.
Yeah.
Because the dialogue is so... It's beyond functional. Because there's part of it is just functional. He's trying to give you the background of these characters, and he's doing it in such a way that it's sort of like, hello, I am a businessman. I sell things for a business, and I have made money, so I am a rich and desirable character that will make a woman happy. And it's like... First of all, ew. But yeah. Second, obviously, no one talks like that. It's a really dry way to present a character.
Yeah.
But if it were just that, it wouldn't take 50 minutes. No, he fills it with what he considers casual conversation. So it'll be like, that chicken's good. Yes, that chicken is good. And you can tell Nguyen is going like, yeah, that's how real people talk. It is.
Yeah.
It's just not anything I want to listen to.
Exactly. You know, go back to watch a good movie and, you know, the scene in the restaurant, do they ever talk about the food? You know, this is very tasty. I think there's corn in this. You know, no, they just...
Unless they can make a punchline related to the character in a way, like they can sort of give you an angle as to how this character views, like, you know, like Sideways will have a scene where they're discussing wine for 10 minutes, but it's because they're really discussing who they are as people while discussing wine. You
or
know?
A movie I hate, but they did it nonetheless in Pulp Fiction when they're talking about, you know, bacon and one guy's not eating pork, you know, and it all leads to, you know, animals with personality. That was kind of fun, you know, they're talking about the food, but it leads somewhere, you know, about the character. It's not just, I like pork. I do not eat pork myself because I do not like it. It's like, no, they don't do that.
Yeah, that's true. Tarantino does make the idle conversation thing, but it works for him because A, the dialogue is witty.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. And second, he uses this as contrast. You're used to seeing hitmen having this very functional dialogue. So, what's my assignment? What's this, this? And then they're just talking about Royale with cheese and what a burger is called in France and whatnot. And you're like, that's kind of funny because you're seeing them as real people all of a sudden. And that's why it works. Yeah. Whereas here, Nguyen is deliberately presenting two everyman character.
Yeah.
And then giving them everyman dialogue. And you're like, well, yeah, I get it.
You know, they're talking about rocket science or something. That'd be something. You know, it's like... What? How did they know this?
Oh, he could talk about his business. Because, like, we know he's a rich businessman because he gets from the phone going like, yes, I will make the sell me immediately. And hangs up, goes like, I just made $1 million. Like, what?
He could have made $2 million because he gave it a 50% rebate before hanging up. When the deal was done, it's like, oh, it's a deal. And I'll even give you 50% off. So he could have sold for $2 million.
And as someone who is running his own business, let me just tell you something, okay? When you just made $1 million over the phone, you haven't made $1 million until you freaking have the check in your hands, alright?
Nice. Good point.
Okay, and then the birds kick in.
The birds kick in. The worst special effects I have ever seen. Like, ever. I cannot go back to movies in the 80s, 70s, even 60s, where the special effects were that bad. This is something like a kid would do when his on his Apple trying to make something funny on YouTube or something. It's like, it's terrible.
Yeah, it's like, what I like about it is how stationary the birds are. Because, okay, they're digital birds and they flap their wings in slow motion for some weird reason.
Yeah.
And they don't move. Like, they, you know, birds move forward. That's how they're able to stay in the air.
Yeah.
And no, these birds just stay stationary in Galaga formation, yeah. And then swooping exactly like Galaga, one at a time to get like the human beings down, and then go back up, and then you can shoot them up. Like it's exactly like Galaga, is what I'm saying.
That's when they don't make dive bombing sound and explode, because you know the birds do that as well for some reason. You know, very dangerous birds, I guess. But if you want to make birds threatening, I guess that's what you have to do: make them explode somehow.
And of course, one of the other issues is that the actors are sort of trying to interact with these very poorly conceived digital effects, and you know, they're not given the proper props to do it or the proper direction even.
What do you mean? You don't think coat hangers is great to fight birds?
No, I think it is a little bit awkward, to be honest, when you're going like, I'm gonna fight the birds, here's a coat hanger.
That second part is just epic, especially since they spent all their time outdoors.
Yeah, well, they have a picnic at one point. Like, that's the part that really blew my mind. It's like, really?
I know. I mean, they're perfectly safe indoors. The birds are outside and, you know, they can't get in, but let's have a picnic.
They also pick up guns everywhere. Like, I don't know where they pick up all their guns, but they get access to guns pretty early on.
Oh, one of the guys that they meet used to be a Marine.
And the way they use their guns is really funny. Natalie, the actress, has clearly never held a gun in her life. And she's, like, shooting it like a kid does, essentially. And just moving the head of the gun back and forth every time. She's going, pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, pretty much. Blanks are expensive. You can't use those. And you need a weaponsmith if you use blanks, too. That's somebody extra on the payroll. So, yeah, you might as well just use plastic and go, pew, pew.
And to a certain degree, like, I prefer that. Because, honestly, if you don't know what you're doing, you should not be playing with guns. Guns. Even with blanks. Like, blanks are actually quite dangerous.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's just like, you know, like, and you'd figure somebody who's a little bit more comfortable with guns would simply not move the gun and let the special effects do the work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The really crappy, horrible special effects do the work. The special effects for the guns is actually like a small explosion next to like the head of the gun, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like, so the bullet explodes every time you shoot. It's really weird.
Yeah. And yeah, at one point they pick up two kids, and the kids are having the time of their lives on that trek. Their parents have just died, but you know, they're having so much fun and they're really enjoying the picnic, and it's like, wow, come on, guys.
You know? Well, maybe the parents were really crappy. You don't know. No, the goofiness aspect is over the top. Like, we've mentioned the gun. Like, one of my favorite scenes with the side characters and the gun, I don't believe it was the children, it was the actual adults, but
yeah.
At one point, there's a guy with a bird in his face. And he's screaming, and so the girl grabs, like, what looks like an AK-47.
Yeah.
And just shoots the bird off of him. It's like, that's where his face is! Yeah. Like, that's not the right plan of action!
And the person died because of the bird, not because of the shot to the face, though. So it was a very good shot on her part, you know?
Not bad from someone who keeps moving the head of the gun all the time.
Indeed. One thing I love about these characters, they are hungry. They are so hungry. They have to stop to eat all the time and drink all the time. We're out of water, out of food. It's like, come on, guys. Can't you hold out one day without eating? Just stay in the safety of the car and keep driving. But no, it's like, oh, we need to go fill these balls in the middle of the forest for some reason. And then they have to go fish because why not? When there are birds attacking, there's no better place to be than fishing.
Yes, but as it turns out, we'll get to that later, but that fishing scene turns out very important.
Yes, indeed.
There's, of course, this big environmental message in it, which is just so cheesy and obnoxious.
Yeah.
At one point, they meet some guy in the forest, and the forest is burning digitally.
Yeah.
Really digitally.
It's like they filmed a match, and then they added the match to the tree, so the tree is burning, you know?
It looks like an old 80s music video is what it looks like. You know, like, in the 80s, the music videos didn't have budgets, because Michael Jackson hadn't really come along yet to completely revolutionize the music video just yet, you know? And so, music videos didn't really have that much of a budget in the early 80s, and so when they'd have something like something burning, it would just be like a blue screen of a flame layered on top of the image.
Nice.
That's what it looks like.
Yep.
So the environmental message. At one point, they meet a big guru who exposes all of that message.
Yeah.
For what feels like 8 hours.
And he's not afraid of the birds because, you know, he's more afraid of mankind. And it's like, oh, come on. No.
I know. It's like, I hate that in movies that are not quite as bad. But
yeah,
and I'm like, it's in this movie, it's actually kind of fun because it's just so over the top.
Yeah,
but it is actually a flaw that you find in normal movies. This sort of like idea of like, you know, you'll have like nature destroying the crap out of men, and then you'll have one guy's like, but is man worse? And I'm like, well, not in the last 2 hours I've seen. Yeah. Like,
good point. Good point. You know? And then the ending, the best part of the movie.
Oh my God.
The birds just leave. All of a sudden they attack and then they decide, eh, you know, we've done our work. They just fly away. And that's it.
I think that's a deliberate choice, though. In fairness, I think it's supposed to be eerie. Like, the birds just ganged up and attacked all humans, and then they stopped, and we'll never really understand why. Except for the guy explaining that it's because of global warming.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we'll never really understand why.
What happened? Global warming is still going on. They did notice a drop in temperature. It's like, okay, we're out of here.
It was a warning. It was a warning. Like, stop your global warming, or we'll do this again.
I guess. It's fair enough.
I think that's the idea.
And so they just attack one hodunk town in middle of California, and then these guys got the message. They'll spread the message throughout the world. I was like, no, they won't.
Well, it's because what you don't see is that over at the UN, there's a bird diplomat going like, all right, we did that to one city. We can do them to all of them. I have a bird army. You listen. Of course, he speaks bird, so it's really just, quack, 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 but you know.
There's a translator.
But when you talked about the ending, I actually thought you meant like the unending shot of the ocean and the mountain. It was just like, and then it just stays on the ocean and a mountain, and you're like,
and the CGI birds flying away as well.
Yeah. And it lasts for freaking ever.
Yeah. Even without it stays like that for forever.
And then the credits roll.
And then the credits roll, and it stays again for all the credits. And you're like, oh my God.
It's sort of like it's a weird Christian rock album ending sort of moment. But I'm going to say something a little bit controversial here. I think he's doing it on purpose. I think James Nguyen is a savvy guy who sort of caught on to the zeitgeist of movies like Troll 2 and The Room, which were movies that were actually made by serious filmmakers trying to make a serious movie, but just either not having the budget, in the case of Troll 2, and the patience to do things right, or not having the talent flat out, in the case of The Room.
Okay.
And he just caught on to the idea that hipsters will elevate and celebrate a movie that's just awful enough to reach awesome from the other end. And I think he's playing like a really big con game where he's deliberately making an awful movie. Because in his interviews, like, he's taking himself super seriously. You know what I mean? Like, in his interviews, he's going like, yeah, like, I'm the romantic thriller guy, and I care about character, and I do independent film because of the Hollywood crap. And I'm like, you can't be that blind. Like, there's no way. There's no way. I mean, like, you can be that blind and do The Room. I can see it. Because The Room, you know, has serious moments in it, and the goofiness is pretty centered on, essentially, his performance.
Yeah.
But here, the goofiness is, like, all over the map. Like, everything that's incompetent is there. I think, like, you can't possibly be standing in front of a crowd and go like, no, I did a totally good movie.
I think he hadn't made, you know, the goofiness from, you know, the script and the crazy things that people do. Maybe, you know, you can kind of equate that to The Room, but it's all the technical problems as well. Like, you can't hear the character speak or the poor editing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can fake that. I mean, I think that actually happened. And, okay, we're stuck with this. We're going to make something about it. But I don't think you can plan, okay, you know, when this guy talks, we're not going to, everybody's silent. And when the girl talks, okay, everybody makes some noise in the background. So it sounds different. I think it's just really like, that's just, he's no good at doing movies. And that just happened.
At the same time, though, he must know once the movie is over, like, you know, any objective mind can go like, I can't hear my own characters. I mean, like, unless you're Christopher Nolan, in which case that's high filmmaking. But
I think the thing is, though, he realized that, and instead of, you know, this production company itself saying, okay, go and, you know, fix that scene, it's just like, well, come on, just make a goofy movie and add that scene in there. It'll be funny because people don't, you know.
And play it up during the interviews is what I'm saying.
Yeah, maybe.
You know?
Yeah.
Because he never lets on that he knows it's a shitty movie. But I think he must know. I think
I'm sure he knows it's a shitty movie. I don't think his initial intention was to make a shitty movie.
And either way, you know, it works. Like, because if he's conned us all and made a terrible movie in the most entertaining way possible, then he's really talented at it and he should be praised for it and we should see his movie.
Yeah.
And if he really is incompetent and by accident reach awesome from the wrong end, then that makes Burnemic Shock and Terror sort of a accidental genius and something totally to be cherished either way. So,
yeah. Either way, it's entertaining. So, you know, that's what I'm looking for in movies. And I completely recommend it. Mm.
Unfortunately, I can't really say the same thing about Birdemic 2, at least from my feelings.
Yeah.
Now, that came out this year.
Yeah.
It is a little bit different in context just by the virtue of it being a sequel. Because at this point, he knows the hipster crowd are making fun of it.
Yeah.
So that changes how I can possibly view his film. And what is the story of Birdemic
2? The story is about making in Hollywood, like Nguyen did, basically. It's a guy who's trying to make a small independent movie, and the two heroes from the first movie just happen to be his friends, so they participate in the movie, and then birds attack.
Well, more than birds this time around. Because you got birds, you got cavemen, you got zombies.
Yeah.
Actually, you got zombie cavemen.
Zombie cavemen, indeed.
Zombie birds, when you think about it.
I guess that's true, because they're all resurrected by the Red Rain, which I guess is blood or just Red Rain. I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's a song by Peter Gabriel. So, yeah, like you said, it's all about the Hollywood. You can see that James Nguyen is totally writing about himself because he's like, I don't want to be part of the studio system. That's not where the real art is. Blah, 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 blah. And you're like, oh, God, no. Stop.
Yeah. If you could be part of the studio system, you would be. And get big paychecks, you would. Just admit it.
No. And there are actual directors who stay away from the studio system deliberately because they want to create freely. There's plenty of them.
Yeah.
But they don't sell out by making a sequel of a movie that's celebrated for being crappy. I'm just saying. If you're going to sell out on that level, you can't say, I'm doing independent film for my integrity. No, you're not, buddy.
That's a good point.
No, you're not.
Yeah. There's also the kid, one of the kids from the first movie that comes back. Apparently, his sister got killed by the fish that they fished at the end of the movie. Or I guess the girl didn't want to come back for this movie, or she was busy, so... Oh, let's kill her off by the fish that Rob caught.
No, it was like, it's the weirdest moment of exposition because he's like in a museum watching all those prehistoric animals that would come back to life later on.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I wish my sister was there, but she got killed by eating that fish that I fished in the first movie. Yeah. Like, that's an interesting choice to get rid of her. Yeah. And then the next scene, he's like seen bouncing around in the museum trying to catch the bones of a bird, and you're like, yeah, you weren't that upset about your sister dying, were you?
No, he just wished she was here now, but he's fine with it now. It's all good.
Well, I mean, I guess it's consistent. He got over his parents pretty quick. He got over his sister pretty quick.
Indeed.
My favorite scene, though, about the Hollywood part is when he gets the money. Now, James Nguyen knows a lot about how to get a movie sold and whatnot. No doubt about it. He doesn't know the basics, but he knows how a movie is actually made and put into production and distribution, because he's made the first one. What he doesn't know is how a movie is financed, because he financed his own movie.
Okay.
So you have this great scene where this investor is talking about the project that's being proposed to the independent filmmaker, and he's about to give him the money, and he's doing it like American Idol style. It's like, it's the weirdest thing where he's going like, well, your script was pretty good, and I'm the kind of guy who'd like to make the movie, but, you know, it's a sort of project, we don't usually like it, and we don't usually do that, so I guess it's okay for choreographer. You're going to Vegas!
Yes!
That's the weirdest thing.
I was honestly expecting different mistakes. Make it funnier again, you know.
Well, he does do different
things. Yeah, he does, but then he repeats the same ones. You're like, okay, it sounds bad. Haha, I get it. You did that in the first one, too. You know, he did do new mistakes, yes.
Well, because how he fixes the sound is through dubbing, which makes sense. I mean, like, because, you know, can't have a boom. But
of course not.
So he fixes it with a by dubbing, and the dubbing is horrible. Like, it's horrendous.
You see the mouth of the girl open and close, and then you hear, like, a second later, yes. It's like, Wow.
Yeah, you feel like you're watching like one of those Italian movies translated in English in the 80s, like a Dario Argento movie.
Yeah,
like, yeah, that's weird. But it, except for the sound quality, because he mixes the sound in studio and he wants to put the sounds of the crowd because they're in a restaurant, even though you don't see the crowd, so that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
The sound of the street. And he puts the sound of the street and the crowd just a little too loud so that you still can't hear the dialogue.
Yeah.
But this time you have no excuse.
Yeah, that's a good point. Or when he's in the car and he's filming in the car driving towards him, and he also gets the back of the light in, on his back on the
yeah, because he's filming window. Through a car that's moving either backwards or forward depending on the shot.
Yeah,
and so yeah, there's a wheel attached to the back of the car, so I'm guessing he was filming from sort of probably a hatchback.
Yeah,
and yeah, you can see like the little end of the
yeah. Oh, and you can see the wiper when he's filming from the front. You can see parts of the wiper. It's like, okay, that's new. That was interesting.
Although, in fairness, I'm willing to give him a pass on this one, actually. Because it's not uncommon for certain movies where you see the boom in front as well. And it's okay because, you know, when you see it on the monitor when you film,
yeah,
it's not the 16:9. It's not a widescreen format.
Okay.
It's usually the 4:3 TV format. Well, not the widescreen TV format that you know today, but the standard TV, which barely exists anymore. But that's what you get from the monitor half the time.
Okay.
And you're supposed to sort of more or less imagine where the black bars are going to be. Or
okay.
You can put some tape in it. So, you know, you will film the boom in normal movies case, or apparently the wiper in his case.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to worry about it because, like, well, that's going to be cut out by the black bar.
Why is it on DVD, though?
Well, the transfer of the DVD is not necessarily him doing it.
Okay.
They probably just did a really crappy job or didn't choose the right aspect ratio that he wanted. So
yeah.
It might not be his fault, this. Like, I'm willing to give him a pass on this.
Okay.
But again, if you're willing to shoot the wiper, why aren't you willing to shoot a boom instead of doing that crappy dubbing? It's really
weird. Because you need to hire somebody to hold the boom, and that's the job again. I guess they want to do low budget.
That's true. He can't do it himself because he's in the movie.
Yes, indeed.
We'll get to that in a second because that links to the end of the movie, which is preposterous.
Yeah.
Actually, let's move on to when the birds are resurrected.
Yeah.
Actually, I thought that the movie would gain my interest at that point because that's what happened with the first movie.
Yeah.
But I actually lost a bit of interest at that point because it was like, oh, I've seen this before.
They did certain different stuff, like the birds are indoors now, somehow. Not quite sure why, but you know, they're filming in the studio inside and all of a sudden they're attacked by birds.
Natalie from the first one.
Yeah.
She's essentially wailing at them like Bart Simpson's going wah, wah, with his windmill fist.
Yeah, basically, that's what she's using against the bird, windmill fists. And it's like, I'm a little disappointed by her performance in this movie. Because they said they were going to play it straight, but I don't think she plays it straight enough. I think she plays it like, I'm trying to play it straight, but I know what kind of movie I'm in, and you know, I'm trying to goofy it up.
Yeah.
So I didn't like her performance there, and I think the windmill punches are kind of, you know, her kind of choice of, you know, I'm being, you know, well, this is a zany movie, so look at what I'm doing. And it's like, yeah, kind of disappointing there.
Yeah, I see what you mean, yeah. And there's a lot of truth in that, especially in some of her deliveries later in the movie where she... These characters, they keep informing us that people are dead.
Yeah.
And, like, she'll be like, he's dead. Ah, and you're like, okay, that was weird.
Yeah.
Whereas the other actress who's taking this seriously cracked me up every time. Because she's like, he's dead.
Yeah.
And then they'd be like, is he breathing? And she'd turn around like, he's dead. Damn it, he's dead.
I think for one guy, they said he's dead 4 times on that one single person. And you're like, wow, really? Come on, let's move on here. And they've been driving around forever, and all of a sudden they meet the cavemen as well that were resurrected at the same time as the birds. And you're like, okay, where did these come from? It's just really weird.
And the cavemen are on the birds' side, and that I don't get, because in the flashback they showed that the cavemen died because the birds spit acid in their faces.
Yeah, exactly.
And they come back and they're like, yeah, we're going to help the birds. And I'm like, why, man?
They saw the light.
The cameos are too much for me in this. You get all of the characters from the first one making an awkward appearance one after the other.
I didn't like that part. I mean, there are certain things I like that they use from the first one, but the characters themselves are like, no, okay. You know, they were there, come up with new, you know, fun characters different than the first one, and, you know, entertain us with them and not just like the same old characters that are like, hey, I was there in the first one, I'm making this cameo. You're like, okay, yeah, right.
And I do the same shtick, no less. Like, it's the same exact shtick.
Yeah.
the long-winded ecological speech, the blah, blah, blah. Which, again, like, what is that? Has that to do with Hollywood? Like, I mean, granted, Hollywood is one of the biggest polluters in the world, but still.
Yeah.
I will say that there's one joke that's subtle, and I don't even know if it's intentional, but I assume it is, that actually did make me laugh and made me go, like, okay, that's actually pretty clever. The last character to die before the birds go away is actually pretty relevant when you look at the casting. I won't say more than that.
Yeah.
But, and that launches a message about the overall theme of the movie as to why the birds attack. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yep. That's a good point.
Yeah. With especially with the Hollywood in jokes. Like, it feels a little bit like the birds are angry at the movie. Yeah. In such a way. That's funny.
If you're a really big fan of the first one, I think there's enough different stuff that you will enjoy it. If you're kind of on the fence with the first one, I wouldn't watch it. But to me, there was enough like new stuff that, you know, it's worth a watch. I probably would not rewatch it again with my friend, with different friends. It's like, yeah, this is funny. But like I do for Birdemic, I've probably seen Birdemic like 3 times now with different people, and I enjoyed every time. This is like, no, once is enough. It's good enough.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it at all. I think Birdemic is a fresh joke. It's fun. It's funny. Whether the joke is intentional or not, it works.
Yeah.
Birdemic 2 is just like the same guy telling you the same joke, but with a little bit of variation, and you're like, well, I heard it before. Get some new material, buddy.
Okay.
That's me.
Yeah.
All right. So if you have any questions, comments, you want to share your love or hatred of Birdemic, Shock and Terror, or Birdemic 2, The Resurrection.
Yeah.
You can write us at mail@idiomatic.com or post a comment at idiomatic.com. And until next time,
see ya.